obsession is the motivation that is hanging up the goddamn nation. Looks like we always end up in a rut. Everybody now trying to make it real.
You'd be William Money out of Missouri. Killer of women and children. That's right. I've killed women and children. I've killed just about everything that walked or crawled at one time or another. And I'm here to kill you, little Bill, for what you did to Ned. Funny thing, killing a man. You take away everything he's got and everything he's going to have. Clint Eastwood's final Western was one of the darkest, most violent, vicious Westerns ever made. Much of the film takes place in darkness. The tone of the film is depressing, with a drained, wintry look reminiscent of High Plains Drifter. The script had been written in 1976 during our last awakening, but Eastwood held off making the movie until 1991, when he was old enough to play the lead role. Age, stages of life, and mood are key elements in this film, as they are in the plot playing out in the world today. Unforgiven is a story of atonement, justice, retribution. The cold, forbidding atmosphere reflects a fourth turning mood. We've entered our hibernal crisis with its violent struggles and compulsory sacrifices in an era of maximum danger and ultimately a fight for survival. This decisive test of human strength and fortitude was as predictable as the change in seasons. Strauss and Howe understood the generational dynamics of the country would align to create this mood change, which would usher in the third, fourth turning in American history. Good evening and welcome to another hour of life, liberty, and all that jazz. I'm your commentator for the hour, Jeffrey Bennett. As many of you know, I'm a film nut, to some degree an aficionado of sorts. I've studied film, watched film since the age of six, where I began to pay attention. And as the years have gone on, I began to realize the intrigue of the real world versus the real world. And when we come back, we're going to discuss the fourth turning in American history, how it is going to affect us all. Stay with us this hour.
Can't you hear a bitter bad that comes with a happy tune as your step? Life can be so divine, right up the sun is...
Heart disease is on the rise. Clogged arteries, high blood pressure, and high cholesterol levels may not be fully detected by you, but the symptoms are there. Loss of energy, blood sugar spikes and drops, poor circulation, and irregular heartbeat are just a few of these that can alert you that something is wrong. Hear how Heart and Body Extract is making a difference in thousands of people's lives across America.
My blood pressure has normalized. My diabetes has totally improved.
Everyone is telling me now how much healthier I look, and I'm telling everyone how much healthier I feel. I recommend Heart and Body Extract to everyone.
Anybody over 40 in the North American continent should be using this product as a preventative to keep their cardiovascular system healthy.
Order your two-month supply today by calling 866-295-5305. That's 866-295-5305. Or order online, hbextract.com. Heart and Body Extract, 866-295-5305 or hbextract.com.
This is an important message from hempusa.org. For our listeners who are advancing in age, baby boomers, and to all who want to be healthy, we urge you to try our microplant powder and see the difference it makes in your life. Please visit hempusa.org and read about microplant powder. It's easy to take, one heaping tablespoon in any liquid three times a day. Call 908-691-2608 or visit hempusa.org. Please inform your family, friends, and relatives about this incredible product. It can change your life if you give it a chance. So try microplant powder today. Call 908-691-2608. In this toxic world, microplant powder can help now in cleaning out heavy metals, parasites, viruses, fungus, and bacteria. Please download our catalog at hempusa.org today.
Are you new to freeze-dried foods? These fine, easily storable foods were first developed for the U.S. space program. Today, the U.S. military and the U.S. submarine service enjoy using these products extensively. Freeze-dried foods typically maintain their high nutritional value in excess of 30 years. Why store emergency food? Keeping food on hand for emergencies protects you the same way as does insurance on your home or car. With Freeze-Dry Guy freeze-dried foods in your food reserve, you can be ready for just about any unexpected crisis. In today's turbulent times of uncertainty, global crisis, world market collapse, stock market volatility, increased frequency of natural and man-made disasters, there has never been a better time to get a survival insurance policy. Take the necessary steps to protect your family in these uncertain times. Visit freezedryguy.com. Or call 866-404-FOOD, 866-404-3663. We pay the freight within the lower 48 states.
Welcome back to tonight's Life, Liberty, and All That Jazz. The next fourth turning is due to begin shortly after the new millennium, midway through the OO decade, around the year 2005, it stated. A sudden spark will catalyze a crisis mood. Remnants of the old social order will disintegrate. Political and economic trust will implode. Real hardship will beset the land with severe distress that could involve questions of class, race, nation, and empire. The very survival of the nation will feel at stake. Sometime before the year 2025, America will pass through a great gate in history, commensurate with the American Revolution, the Civil War, the twin emergencies of the Great Depression and World War II. Obviously written before the year 2000. Unforgiven, the movie, follows the journey of William Money, a cold-blooded, vicious bandit in his youth, turned peaceful farmer in his old age. As a widower with two kids and a failing farm, he agrees to kill two cowboys who had disfigured a prostitute in the town of Big Whiskey in return for a reward of $1,000. In his youth, Money had drank heavily and murdered for fun. Now he was killing for money. The town is run with an iron fist by an aging gunfighter turned sheriff named Little Bill Daggett, who doesn't allow guns in his town. Money and his two companions arrive amidst a driving rainstorm in the middle of the night. They proceed to execute the two cowboys, but both of Money's companions reveal that they don't have the stomach for killing anymore. After collecting the reward, Money finds out that his friend Ned was captured, tortured, and murdered by Little Bill Daggett. Takes a drink of whiskey, and the tale turns into a story of retribution and atonement. He arrives back in town in the pitch black of night, enters the saloon where Little Bill and his men are gathered. He guns down six men, including Little Bill. As Little Bill lies on the floor wounded, he laments that he doesn't deserve to die this way, and Money declares, "Deserves got nothing to do with it." Bill tells Money he'll see him in hell, a sentiment which Money agrees with, and Money then kills him. But there's no rousing ending, no cheers from the audience. The ugliness of violence is portrayed realistically, and myths of the Old West are somehow demolished. You're left to meditate about the concepts of age and repute and courage, heroism, and the fine line between good and evil. And the themes, atmosphere, violence, brutality, and the finale of this eulogy to the Western genre are a perfect representation of our current dire circumstances. The town of Big Whiskey represents the United States. The sheriff rules with an iron fist over the population, but his cronies can get away with murder. Hypocrisy abounds across the United States as politicians use the rule of law to keep the masses controlled while rewarding their corporate and banker cronies with government handouts, tax breaks, and free money. I see Money, his companions, and the prostitutes as symbols of the flawed citizens of the United States. They've made mistakes, committed crimes, made poor life choices, but they ultimately tried to make an honest living as upstanding citizens. And when the authorities pushed them to the brink with their overbearing regulations, brazen criminal actions, and blatant institutional corruption, each constituent reacted differently. Some responded with defiance. Most rolled over. Some ran away. Money responded with viciousness and retribution. And that, my friends, is how it's going to play out over the next 10 to 15 years, if we last that long. Cynicism about solutions put forth by corrupt politicians, distrust of government bureaucrats and crooked bankers, and society-wide demoralization, as widespread unemployment and declining living standards for middle-class Americans has darkened the landscape like an approaching winter storm. The disillusionment of average Americans is reflected in poll after poll, with only 20% of the population satisfied with the direction of the country versus 70% just prior to 9/11. The mood change in the country since 2005 is palpable. The gap between the haves and the have-nots has never been greater and continues to widen. Well, the middle class has floundered for decades while bankers, politicians, and corporate titans have reaped vast riches through peddling debt and garnering a system rigged in their favor. Recent data from the Pew Foundation finds that Americans are sick of being the world's policemen. Even conservative Republicans are becoming more isolationist in their views. This was also the case during the 1930s in the last fourth turning. This is the turning of the screw, my friends. The vast majority of Americans want to keep our noses out of other countries' affairs because they realize that trillions of dollars are spent and are bankrupting the country. And even though Americans, by a large majority, favor slashing foreign aid and ending our three foreign wars of aggression and no longer allowing the super rich and mega corporations to use the 60,000-page tax code as their means to avoid taxes, our leaders increase war spending, continue to meddle in the affairs of foreign countries, seek further tax benefits for the super rich and mega conglomerates. The will of the people is ignored because the government has been bought by the financial and military industrial complex, with funding by the Federal Reserve and the banking cartel that pulls the strings on their puppet, Ben Bernanke. We recently took a Friday and shared a part of a series with you. This particular series dealt with Josie Wales, or at least the last episode did. This one, of course, is based more on Eastwood's final movie, The Unforgiven. It is an amazing five-part series that has been published on the net, and for many, many, many reasons. Some have read it, some have not. It fits what I like to share with you. Once again, this combination of real, R-E-A-L, versus real, R-E-E-L, life. We have revealed over the years how the super rich have used the tax code and their control of politicians to pillage the nation. This evening we'll attempt to detail the likely result of years of frivolous consumerism, creation of a debt tsunami, corrupt myopic leadership, crooked bankers, and an angry, despondent populace. The lack of preparation by government and individuals ensures this crisis will be far worse than it ever had to be. The violent clash between competing forces will be extreme, bloody, and it will result in retribution dished out to the guilty. But ultimately, this country will need to atone for its sins. Once again, from Strauss and Howe. Reflect on what happens when a terrible winter blizzard strikes. You hear the weather warning, but probably fail to act on it. The sky darkens. And then the storm hits with full fury and the air is a howling whiteness. One by one, your links to the machine age break down. Electricity flickers out, cutting off the television. Batteries fade, cutting off the radio. Phones go dead. Roads become impossible. Cars get stuck. Food supplies dwindle. Day-to-day vestiges of modern civilization, bank machines, mutual funds, mass retailers, computers, satellites, airplanes, governments, all recede into irrelevance. Picture yourself and your loved ones in the midst of a howling blizzard that lasts for several years. Think about what you would need, who could help you, why your fate might matter to anyone other than yourself. That is how to plan for a secular winter. Don't think you can escape the fourth turning of the screw, my friends. History warns that a crisis will reshape the basic social and economic environment that you now take for granted. But the fourth turning was as predictable as the seasons. The American Revolution crisis ended in 1794, and the Civil War crisis arrived some 66 years later in 1860. That abbreviated vicious crisis ended in 1865. And 64 years later, the Depression, World War I, World War II crisis came about. Our current crisis arrived in 2008 and 2009 time frame, exactly 64 years after the end of the last crisis. Strauss and Howe wrote in their book in 1996, they knew we had about a decade to prepare for the looming winter ahead. We had time to fortify, prepare, save, not waste our seed corn on foreign adventures, and reduce all non-essential spending. Not only did we not do what needed to be done, we did the exact opposite of what needed to be done. But the reason is the country has been run by ideologue linear thinkers. Believers in linear history are constantly blindsided by the fact that history is cyclical and periods of progress are counterbalanced by periods of regression. As neocon Republicans continue to push their lowering taxes on the rich, Christian fundamentalism, drill, 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 energy plan, bowing down to Wall Street bankers and wars on Muslims and drugs and immigration agenda and cancer and God knows what else, the mood of this country has shifted away from their falsehoods and fabrications. And as ultra-liberal Democrats continue to push their agenda of ever-increasing entitlements, ridiculous Keynesian stimulus, disingenuous green energy plans, blind support of corrupt unions, and wars to prove that they're as tough as Republicans, pushing for gay marriage, rolling over for Wall Street bankers, the people of this nation have tired of their lies and deceit. My question is, have they tired enough? Our country has had well over a decade to prepare for this coming tempest. All generations should have worked to elevate the moral and cultural standards of the country. Instead, the decadence, the selfishness, materialism, and profligacy of the nation were taken to new heights. Complete lack of self-control exercised by the media and the public has allowed government bureaucrats to impose despotic laws and regulations to protect us from ourselves and the boogeyman, phantom terrorists. The federal government needed to cut back its size and scope that it would be nimble in the face of a crisis. Politicians needed to prevent further civic decay by speaking bluntly and honestly to the American people about the future challenges while stressing collective duties over personal rights. Oh, we needed a revival of citizenship over individualism with a focus on future generations who would be left with the fallout of 30 years of debt-induced societal degradation. The government should have shifted its budgetary focus away from the non-needy old to the young people of our once great republic. The future of the country depends on the young, not the old. And yet it is the wisdom of the old that should be able to guide the foolishness of the young. But overall, the preparation scorecard on all of these accounts is a miserable failure. Oh, some of you, because much of the audience that listens to this program, to this network, are older Americans and will be offended by the fact that I'm saying we should focus away from the elderly onto the young. I don't mean by handing out checks, people. It's by education, not indoctrination. These young punks today aren't going to make it to 65. Not with the wisdom that many of us have. Since 9/11, the American public has willingly allowed this government to strip liberties and freedoms away in the name of safety and security through passage of the Patriot Act, spying on all the citizens, wars of aggression in Iraq, Afghanistan, Libya, and frankly, yes, right here in the streets of America. The government wolves control the sheep for the use of fear and misinformation, and the war on terrorism is used at every opportunity to keep the sheep-like populace under control in their holding pens. Makes me want to pull out the music from Pink Floyd. The corporate-owned mainstream media glorifies wealth and celebrity and sensationalism, all while infecting the culture with a vapid, mind-numbing array of television shows and spewing toxic levels of filth and porn across the airwaves and internet. The federal government cut back its scope by increasing its annual spending to $3.8 trillion in 2011 versus the $1.6 trillion it spent in 1996. That's a 138% increase in 15 years. And meanwhile, the gross domestic product only increased by 92% over the same time frame. Oh, our leaders prepare for the tough times ahead, my friends, by increasing the national debt from $5.2 trillion when Clinton was in office to $14.3 trillion in 15 years. That is a 175% increase, almost twice the rate of the gross domestic product growth. And the majority of that increase in that debt has taken place in the last 2.5 years under the guidance of one Barack Hussein Obama. You see, rational leaders always triple their debt level when knowing that harsh times are coming. Once again, every number that comes out of the government is a lie by three. Remember that. Now, the blunt talk coming emanating from the orifices of politicians since 1996 included buy an SUV with 0% financing to defeat terrorism. Sure, we can pay for your drug costs with Medicare Part D. How about home prices never fall and everyone deserves a house? Another headline, free market capitalism always works. And still another, cutting taxes on the rich will increase tax revenue. And they have weapons of mass destruction. Oh, we all remember that one now, don't we? And of course, my favorite, debt doesn't matter. That seems to be the motto in D.C. Giving bankers $700 billion will save our economy. And just months later, spending $800 billion will generate 3.5 million jobs. And, of course, the best one we saved to last. And QE2 will reduce mortgage rates and jumpstart the economy. Have a single one of those headlines proven to be successful? Have they made a difference? Have we grown? Have we advanced? Have we become a stronger nation because of any of this garbage that emanates from their mouths? Look, our leaders have thrown the millennial generation under the bus. They got Generation X, Generation Y. Baby, there's only one left, and that's Generation Z, and that's the end of the alphabet. What are they going to do? They've thrown this whole generation under the bus. Oh, they've promised never cut Medicare, Medicaid, Social Security for the 76 million boomers that make up the largest voting bloc in the country. The collective long-term survival of this nation has been cast aside in the name of the selfish desires of the generations in power. The lack of cultural and civic preparation has been far outdone by the extraordinarily deficient amount of preparation in the economic and military areas. Everyone knows that when you discern tumultuous times are on the horizon, then you conserve, you save, you marshal your forces for the coming storm. Our leaders needed to level with Americans and tell them that the entitlements they were promised could never be honored. But then they knew that when they established them. Americans needed to ramp up their own personal savings, become more self-reliant in preparing for their old age. Federal, state, and local governments needed to shift their employees from defined benefits plans to defined contribution plans. Americans needed to pare back their debt and stop overconsuming. You cannot blame the advertisers and the issuers of credit cards. They give them to you, but only you can spend them. And yet the government needed to balance budgets. They needed to reform the tax code, shifting toward consumption and reduce entitlement promises. America needed to gird for a possible war whose scale and cost, manpower and casualties would seem impossible at 1996 levels. Remember, every prior fourth turning led to all-encompassing war. The preparation scorecard for these areas was dreadful. The most damning data in proving how delusional the government and consumers and businesses and banks has approached the future is the rise in total credit market debt from $18 trillion in 1996 to an all-time high of, get this, over $52.6 trillion today. 350% of our gross domestic product is credit. It's borrowed money. No nation, no empire in history has ever been able to survive with that. And so rather than level with people and explain that entitlement promises could not be fulfilled, a supposedly fiscal conservative Republican president added another $15 trillion unfunded liability to our $100 trillion obligation. Who it was doesn't matter. Our current socialist leader rammed through a national health care bill that will filter 30 million people into the system and will add an excess of $1 trillion of unpaid costs, further burying the hopes and dreams of our youth under a mountain of unpayable obligations. And I still maintain that the number of people that are going to get sucked into the health care seems to be approximately about the same number of illegal aliens we have in this country. You know, Americans used to save 10% of their disposable income. We were only saving 5.5% in 1996. Rather than prepare for the future by saving more, they put their faith in housing values growing 10% per year for infinity. And they let their savings drop below 1% by 2005. The current level of 4.9% is not sufficient and is reflected in the fact that two-thirds of all workers have less than $50,000 in all forms of savings. States have unfunded pension liabilities now approaching $3 trillion, with the federal government carrying a $1 trillion pension liability. Unfunded liabilities are really future tax increases on unborn generations. It's amazing to me. How are we going to survive? The one area that seemed under control in the late 1990s was budget deficits. Budget surpluses in the late 90s turned into $1.5 trillion annual deficits today, and as far as the eye can see, we're in deep trouble. We will be back.
You're listening to the Republic Broadcasting Network because you can handle the truth.
The Grainmaker Grain Mill. Handmade goodness since 1999. Handcrafted stainless steel and high-quality alloys. There has not been a finer grain mill made right here in the great state of Montana. Hand-operated, the grain mill does it all. Wheat, corn, peanut butter, rye, rice, coffee, beans, flaxseed, all grain types. Make your own gluten-free flour. Experience the satisfaction of providing wholesome, nutritious foods for your family without additives or preservatives. Each meal is handcrafted with manufacturer's lifetime warranty. To order your grain meal, call us at 1-800-724-2719 or go to our online store, republicbroadcasting.org. Take a look at why this grain meal will be passed down through generation.
Are skyrocketing prescription costs draining your budget? If you don't have insurance or are taking medication not covered by insurance, the Powerhouse Savings Card can lower your prescription costs by up to 50%. Now you and your family can save 20 to 50% on all prescriptions. It's accepted by most pharmacies and mail-order pharmacies nationwide. No prescription card is easier to use. Just show your card and save 20 to 50% right on the spot. There are no monthly fees. Just a one-time processing fee of only $4.95 for you and your immediate family. Stop paying full price for prescriptions. Stop going without the medication you need because it costs too much. Now your family can get the prescriptions they need at a cost you can afford. Call 1-800-963-0232 now and start saving money with the Powerhouse Savings Card. Call 1-800-963-0232. 1-800-963-0232. 1-800-963-0232.
Introducing IXL Anti-Friction Metal Conditioner. IXL works at the molecular level to reduce friction by penetrating into and bonding onto the microscopic openings of the walls of ferrous base metals. The surfaces become smoother and denser, and this reduces the heat, friction, metal expansion, and wear caused by moving metal surfaces. The benefits are reduced maintenance activities and cost, increased fuel efficiency, and prolonged equipment life. It will not clog filters, pipes, injectors, or supply lines, does not build up or accumulate upon itself as do many other additives. IXL does not contain moly, PTFE, or graphites. Also offers the tremendous benefits of being non-toxic. It's used for a friction reducer and performance enhancer in gas or diesel engines, transmissions, automatic or standard gearboxes, turbos, electric motors, outdrives, lathe, and cutting applications. Go to republicbroadcasting.org, then to our online store, or call us at 800-724-2719. That's 800-724-2719.
So be sure that your umbrella is upside down. A trainer for a package of...
Welcome back, my friends.
A sunshine and flowers.
For those of you who sent me emails during the break, my dear Elaine, thank you very much. Yeah, it's a matter of grasping just how far down the river we as a nation have been sold. These are the very things that Roger has been talking about in other respects when he comes on this program on Wednesdays. And the average person doesn't get it. And I'm afraid that a good number of the people that listen to this network, I'm not even sure get it. I think a lot do, but many feel that there's nothing they can do about it, so why bother? Look, it's simple. If you take the same kind of numbers I'm sharing with you from a national level and you put it in terms of your own household, I made the comment on the program the other night that women are better as a rule, unless you can keep them out of Macy's, that they're a better manager of money. That's why the women always handle the checkbook. They handle the finances. They paid the bills. They bought the groceries. They're better shoppers. Guys, we'll go into a grocery store and say, oh, I want that package of chocolate cookies, or I want this, or I want that. And we just grab it with no consciousness of budget. And that's the insanity of Washington, D.C. and the Federal Reserve. They think there is no tomorrow. And they're spending that way. Or they think there is a tomorrow. And I maintain that the day is going to come. There will be no tomorrow. As I mentioned before the break, budget surpluses in the late 1990s turned into a $1.5 trillion annual deficit. That's what we've got today. As far as the eye can see, the national debt stands today at 95% of our gross domestic product. It has passed the point of no return. It cannot recover. That's simple. The price for a barrel of oil in 1998 was $12. Rather than taking advantage of that Indian summer and creating a plan to transition from depleting oil or transition from counting on foreign oil and taking a strong look at converting to other legitimate energy sources, our leaders did not do one damn thing. And why? Because the lobbyists of big business interests. Go back and look at the movie Tucker. Jeff Bridges, who years later won an Academy Award, long overdue. In the film Tucker, who depicted the inventor of the automobile, I can't think of his first name right now, he basically made the statement that if we're not careful, the day will come that we will be buying all of our products from our former enemies, which turned out to be absolutely the truth. We rely too much on others to feed our needs. And so beginning back in the 90s, the American people bought massive SUVs and minivans and pickups. They moved further into the suburban countryside, miles from civilization. The bumpy plateau of peak oil has arrived. Oil prices have ranged between $70 and $140 a barrel over the last few years. And in just a few years more, we will long for the prices that we're paying now. Rather than conserving our military forces, preparing for a future major confrontation, we have overextended our limited forces. We spent $1.2 trillion on wars of choice. We've killed 7,300 American soldiers and wounded another 43,000. And if you were reading any of the headlines yesterday, a veteran who served two tours in Iraq is being denied the ability to build a home in a homeowners association community. I believe it's in Florida. The complete and total lack of preparation, indeed the choice to actively do the opposite of prepare, has ensured that the fourth turning of the screw and its crisis will be that much more destructive. Once again, from Strauss and Howe, history offers no guarantees. If America plunges into an era of depression or violence, which by then is not lifted, we will likely look back on the 1990s as the decade when we valued all the wrong things and made all the wrong choices. From Chris Whalen, who states, the refusal of the political class to impose losses on large bank creditors since the collapse of Lehman Brothers and Washington Mutual in 2008 illustrates the extent to which the financialization of the Western industrial economies has turned into a gradual coup d'etat by the banks and the global speculators who dominate their client base. Try this quote on for size. We're not moving toward Hitler-type fascism, but we're moving toward a softer fascism. Loss of civil liberties, corporations running the show, big government in bed with big business. So you have the military-industrial complex, you have the medical-industrial complex, you have the financial industry, you have the communications industry. They go to Washington and spend hundreds of millions of dollars. That's where the control is. I call that a soft form of fascism, something that is very dangerous. Quote by Ron Paul. As the average American continues their epic struggle to stay afloat in these turbulent times, it is clear to those with critical thinking skills, people like Whalen and Paul and others, that the game is rigged in favor of those with enormous wealth and power. There's no doubt the levers of government and finance have been seized by a super-rich minority of men willing to use all means necessary to increase their wealth and power at the expense of those they consider lowly, expendable peasants. The myth perpetrated by those in control of the system is that everyone in America has ample opportunity to move up the ladder, even as they push the ladders away from the parapet surrounding their castle. Oh, yeah, George Jefferson, baby, we're moving on up to the east side, to a deluxe apartment in the sky. You see, the talking points of the super rich, which are pounded into the brains of slumbering Americans, are that they pay all the taxes, create all the jobs, create all the wealth, and they're the ones who drive innovation. But the facts say otherwise. The super rich aren't creators, they're destroyers. The top 0.1% richest Americans didn't get rich by creating new companies and letting their entrepreneurial talents shine. These 152,000 people with an average income of $5.6 million a year are overwhelmingly executives at large corporations and banks and law firms and real estate firms. These people account for 68% of the richest of the rich. Entrepreneurial creators and producers account for less than 10% of the richest Americans. The executives that made up the 68% are masters of creating debt, wealth for themselves by peddling debt to the middle class, creating jobs in China and India by outsourcing your job. and the average income of the 137 million people that sit at the bottom of the pyramid has declined by 1% since 1970. The people at the top of the pyramid saw their average income rise by 385%. Was this because they worked harder? No, it was because they used their existing wealth to buy politicians and pay lobbyists to write laws, create loopholes, reduce regulations, and alter the tax code in their favor. This was not a conspiracy. It was human nature. You see, humans, believe it or not, are driven by greed and fear. They lust for power. And lusting for power and wealth is a common human frailty. Those who are able to acquire wealth and power through their superior abilities and intellect are usually driven individuals. It's built into their DNA to seek more wealth, more power. There's 310 million Americans, and based on charts that we've got access to, only 1.5 million would be classified as very rich or extremely rich. Many of these people associate in the same circles. It is an incestuous relationship. And that's what breeds the growing inequality in our country. The game is rigged in favor of those 1.5 million people because they run the corporations. They occupy the halls of Congress. They peddle the debt products to the bottom 90% and use their mass media to control the message to the undereducated, the overmedicated, the gadget-distracted masses. The problem with humans is they always push the envelope just a bit too far. The rich and powerful have methodically accumulated more wealth and more power since their glorious coup in 1913 with the creation of the Federal Reserve and the personal income tax. They've used inflation and the tax code to further their agenda. The rate of their pillaging has waxed and waned over the last century as the mood of the country has oscillated during the five turnings between crisis and triumph. The rate of looting has accelerated in the past 30 years as their false message of free market capitalism, lower taxes for the rich, and the issuances of unparalleled amounts of debt was bought hook, line, and sinker by the American public. And their plundering of the national wealth reached a sickening crescendo in the last decade as their internet bubble was replaced by their housing bubble, which has been replaced by their debt bubble of immense proportions. As the middle class has been impoverished, 30 million people are unemployed or underemployed. Not the 9.1 million that the government wants to tell you. It's over 30 million. Senior citizens have been sacrificed at the altar of Wall Street, and 45 million people in this nation today are forced to exist on food stamps. Oh, baby, that top 1% has done fabulously well. They continue to rake in greater proportion of the national income every single year. And just 2 years ago, in 2009, in the midst of an epic financial crisis, the number of millionaires in the United States soared by 16% to 7.8 million. As despair and hopelessness spread across the land and fearful Americans were railroaded into bailing out the bankers that initiated the crisis, and they believed in Obama, yo mama. They believed in the one, and his Keynesian solutions would actually trickle down to them. Pfft. We've already learned trickle-down economics didn't work under Ronald Reagan. They darn sure aren't going to work for Uncle Remus and his gang. And as the game approaches the inevitable termination, those in control have become increasingly audacious and frantic in their attempts to embezzle what remains of middle-class wealth. The anger and disillusionment grows by the day, my friends, and the mood of the country darkens like the sky before an approaching blizzard. The intensity and violence during a fourth turning hastens, and events spiral towards a climax. And the extreme actions taken by those in power since September of 08 have set in motion a chain of events that will lead to civil war. You see, the powerful elite in government, the Bush and Paulsons, Bernanke's, Congress, And Obama and his whole crowd, they chose at that time, at least under Bush's group, to bail out the powerful elite on Wall Street. Blank Fine, Dimon, Pandit, Lewis, And they did all this on the backs of the American middle class. And then we had TARP and QE1 and QE2 and, well, they're not calling it QE3, but you know what it is, $800 billion stimulus package. That was all created by the ruling elite to benefit the ruling elite who control the vast amount of financial wealth in the country. Savers and seniors have been thrown under the wheels of a Lamborghini driven by the profligate Wall Street whores. And average Americans feel betrayed by politicians and bankers in corporate America. And you're all sitting around arguing about which one of the supposed Republicans can beat Obama. You think they're any cleaner than he is? Not a one of them. Not one is deserving of my vote. Not one of them. They've either been in the system too long or they're just an insider. The Tea Party movement is a reflection of that anger, of course. But fourth turnings always sweep away the old order, replace it with the new order. Old order isn't ready to be swept away yet, but their time's coming. The U.S. economic model is unsustainable. It's guaranteed to collapse in the near future. And those in power are trying to engineer a control collapse, but they will lose control just as they did in 08. Panic and depression will ensue this time. Vast amounts of wealth will be destroyed. When the middle class realizes they've been screwed again by Wall Street and K Street and they no longer have anything left to lose, they will lose it. But the welfare class will only riot if their EBT card stops working and the monthly welfare direct deposit ceases. It is the critical thinkers in the middle class that will lead a revolution. Like it or not, there's 250 million guns owned by Americans, and with this amount of firepower and millions of Americans with nothing left to lose, those attempting to retain power will be at a distinct disadvantage. There'll be no corner of the globe that they can hide. Yes, I believe armed vigilantes will hunt down those responsible for the destruction of the American economy and invoke their own justice. Their gated communities and penthouse suite doormen will not protect them. No politician or banker or corporate executive will be safe. Some will escape in their Lear jets to foreign lands, but the rest of the world will be equally chaotic and unsafe for those who committed crimes against humanity. Innocent people will die, yes, but deserve will have nothing to do with it. The very existence of our country will hang in the balance. Once again, Strauss and Howe. The seasons of time offer no guarantees. For modern societies, no less than for all forms of life, transformative change is discontinuous. For what seems an eternity, history goes nowhere, and then it suddenly flings us forward across some vast chaos that defies any mortal effort to plan our way there. The fourth turning will try our souls, and the secular rhythm tells us that much will depend on how we face up to that trial. The seculum does not reveal whether the story will have a happy ending, but it does tell us how and when our choices will make a difference. Don't think you can escape the fourth turning the way you might today distance yourself from news or national politics or even taxes you don't feel like paying. History warns that a crisis will reshape the basic social and economic environment that you now take for granted. The fourth turning necessitates the death and rebirth of the social order. It is the ultimate rite of passage for an entire people, requiring a luminal state of sheer chaos whose nature and duration no one can predict in advance. My friends, no one can predict the exact events, the debt ceiling, the euro collapse, the Middle East war, that will propel this fourth turning. But the underlying drivers are clear. Public debt, private debt, banker coup, military overreach, corporate fascism, Federal Reserve created inflation, an oil-dependent society with depleting oil and rampant corruption across all levels of government. The fingers of instability grow longer as we add $4 billion a day to the national debt. A grain of sand will fall on the wrong part of the sand pile, triggering a collapse of our currency. A complete collapse. The event is unknown, the timing unclear, but the destination is certain. A dollar collapse will trigger a surge in interest rates, which will be fatal to our debt-bloated society. And understand historically that every previous fourth turning involved revolutionary aspects. The American Revolution, the War of Northern Aggression, they were wars of revolution. The stirrings of revolution were rampant in the early 1930s with a plot foiled by General Smedley Butler. The New Deal was a response designed to quell discontent among the masses. Enough people are becoming aware of who to blame for the ills in our society that Henry Ford's prediction is ever closer to being realized. Henry Ford stated, "It is well enough that people of the nation do not understand our banking and monetary system, for if they did, I believe there would be a revolution before morning." An uprising against the super rich and their banking cartel partners in crime is in the cards over the next 10 years. Our society has degenerated, has been ransacked by sociopaths in suits, as Jesse from Jesse's Cafe Americans so eloquently states. Not all sociopaths wield knives and knotted cords. Some wear suits and are exceptionally intelligent and articulate, obsessively driven, and are able to use and undermine the law and the rules for their advantage like weapons. It's never about the win. It's never about the money. It is about the kill, the expression of their hatred, about elevating themselves with the suffering of others. Bind, torture, kill, not only with ropes and knives, but also with power and money and the subversion of law. Lawlessness is their addiction, their will to power. When societies become lax and complacent, these sociopaths can possess great political power through great amounts of unprincipled money. Unprincipled money. And over time, they become almost anti-human, destroyers of all that is good, all that is life. And that offends their insatiable sickness with its goodness. They twist the public against itself and turn a broad sweep of society into their killing grounds. This is the undeniable lesson of the last century. There are monsters and they walk among us. Once again, human beings are a flawed species. We're driven by emotion rather than by reason. We are easily convinced of things we want to be convinced about. And those with superior intelligence often take advantage of those with inferior intelligence. We're prone to mass hysteria and believing things that in retrospect were utterly ridiculous. We can be swayed by fear and greed and alternating degrees of delusion. History teaches us that this time is no different. We've experienced depression and war and social upheaval on an epic scale three times since the founding of this nation. With only three data points, it is tough to discern patterns that would reveal exactly how this fourth turn of the screw will play out. But it is apparent to me that each fourth turning alternates between mostly external struggle and a mostly internal struggle. The American Revolution was a struggle against an external oppressor, Great Britain. The Civil War was an internal struggle between the industrial North and the agrarian South. And the Depression, a World War II struggle, was mainly against an external threat. We're told it was Germany, Japan, and Italy, but I really wonder, was it? The fourth turning is centered around an external threat. Ended with a glorious high, my friends. The Civil War fourth turning resolution felt more like defeat, with a country exhausted and bitter and angry. And all indications are that this fourth turning will be mainly an internal struggle between the ruling class of bankers and business elites and politicians and the downtrodden middle class. The lying, cheating, fraud, the theft and other wrongs committed by those in power will need to be atoned for. The generational dynamics in place will drive the reaction to the country moving forward. We have been badly led. A vast swath of the populace have lived beyond their means. The existing system is unsustainable. And the boomer generation does not want to yield on their perceived entitlements. If I thought it would make a difference, I'd tell them, keep them. They're not entitlements. It's mine. You took it from me. I want it back. But if I thought it would make a difference, I'd let them keep it. But it won't. They'll just steal it for some other nefarious purpose. The younger generations will never be able to pay the debts that are being mounted upon us today. The ruling class will be stripped of their unseemingly acquired wealth. The boomer generation will be scorned for their reckless disregard for future generations, and we will be stripped of our entitlements. Generation X will resign themselves to a lower standard of living, knowing full well by doing so their children will not be saddled with crushing levels of debt. I don't think they've got the intelligence to even understand that, my friends. The risk. Let me close by saying this. There are no guarantees, for each generation's rendezvous with destiny awaits. Thank you, Mr. Reagan. The myth of American exceptionalism will not protect us from the choices we have made. God will not shield us from the consequences of our actions. The American empire hangs in the balance. And as the ghosts of Roman emperors whisper, glory is fleeting. The risk of catastrophe is going to be high. The nation could erupt into insurrection or civil violence. It could crack up geographically or succumb to authoritarian rule. If there is a war, it is likely to be one of maximum risk and effort. In other words, a total and complete war. Every fourth turning has registered an upward ratchet in the technology of destruction and in mankind's willingness to use it. Once again, the American empire hangs in the balance as the ghosts of Roman emperors whisper, glory is fleeting. Thank you for allowing me to indulge for this past hour. Without apology, I am Jeffrey Bennett.
Oh, baby, what you got?
The next round of the worst financial crisis in 100